Since this is one of our most important holidays in the United States, and also, it's also a day that we recognize our freedoms, I thought it'd be wise to focus on the topic of nationalism. Now, you may think I'm going to challenge it or talk about the bad side of it or something like that, but that's not where I want to go. There's a good side to nationalism. And my goal in this homily is to direct our attention to find the good balance, because we as Christians stand in two different places. We are both citizens of this country and also citizens of heaven. So the big question is, how do we deal with that duality, that nuance part of our life? And that's exactly what I want to focus on. But in order for us to understand how the Catholic Church understands nationalism, I want to take you through a journey through history to see how it unfolds and why the popes have spoken the way they have. Going all the way back to the books of Numbers and Deuteronomy, when the Israelites were wandering through the desert, God made one thing very clear to them. You have one nation that I have apportioned for you. Everything else is not yours. So as they wandered through the desert and went from country to country, land after land, kingdom after kingdom, God was very clear. You are not to conquer these people. You are not to fight them. With a few exceptions where the country fought them, so they slaughtered them all. But when they got to Moab, they were not allowed to take the land of Moab. When they got to Edom, they're not allowed to take the land of Edom. Only when they got to the promised land, the land apportioned by God, were they allowed to conquer that land and make it their own. And then from that point forward, for the rest of Israelite history, they never conquered any more land. The land of Israel was their land. There was no more. They never went on campaigns. They never went and fought other nations except to secure their borders. Now that says something. It says that from the beginning, God intended that all the nations of the world have their land, their boundaries, their place, so that all the nations will be at peace. They would not fight for each other. They would just be there and establish their land. And Israel lived that. But it wasn't as though they were isolated and secluded like they thought they should be. What God wanted was by having this one special land that was his special people, he'd call all people to that place and guide them to seek his ways. Through that nation, he would show his glory to the world. And so from that point forward, we get to our first reading from the book of the prophet Ezekiel. Or as the land was established, they lived out their life, the prophets would call them back to conversion. What's interesting about the prophets of the Old Testament is they never preached anywhere else. They only preached in Israel. Sometimes, to tick off the Israelites, they'd go off to some other land and do some cool thing and then come back. But the prophets were always for Israel and Israel alone. God cared about his people as his special people. So that when we get to the age of Jesus, things don't really change. The only thing that changed was that the land of Israel was controlled by the Roman government, and the Roman government greatly oppressed the people. Yet in the midst of all this oppression and this kind of confusion, Jesus was very firm on how we ought to act. He followed all civil laws as long as they were just and moral. He paid taxes, as we know from when he was asked about the census tax, and he turned around and paid the census tax. He paid the taxes due to Rome. He followed Roman law, with the exception of worshiping their gods, and lived as a good, upright citizen in the midst of the country he was. And as we hear from our gospel for today, we forget this point. He was Israeli. He was a Roman citizen. He lived in a city. He had a house. He had family. This is Jesus. So that he was established and rooted in his own homeland. This is where he preached. This is where he worked. This was his ministry, the people of Israel. Which is almost shocking for us to think that way. We think of him as universal and all over the place. But that's not what they propose in the Gospels. Jesus was from Israel. He was a Judahite. He was established in the Roman Empire. The next two centuries didn't go so well for the Christian church. The Roman government, deciding that the Christians needed to worship their gods, persecuted them heavily to the point of many, many martyrdoms. But in the midst of all the martyrdoms and the chaos in the church for the first two centuries, these Christians themselves stood very firmly on this fact. They are Roman citizens and also citizens of heaven. They obeyed all civil laws except for the ones that were unjust, namely worshiping the gods of the Romans. They did everything right. They never fought the Romans. They never made an uprising. They never made a coup. They just lived their lives as Roman citizens and Christians and did what they ought to. Didn't always work out well for some of them, but hey, it worked out well overall. As we get to the turn of the 6th century, things radically changed. So now the Roman Empire is about to fall. And then the emperor of Constantinople, who originally resided in Rome, left. He abandoned in Rome and Western Europe and went back to Turkey, to Constantinople, leaving no ruling authority in all of Western Europe, except for one, the Pope. The Pope was the sole authority in all Western Europe for over 600 years. And in that way, he became the authority, so that kings were crowned by the Pope. Authority came from the Pope. The ability to rule was all from the Pope. Everything was under the banner of Christianity. Everything was under the banner of religion. And so for that way, we didn't talk about nationalism. There weren't nations. There are kingdoms all underneath the banner of the Pope. That didn't last all that long. We fast forward 800 years, we get to a very important moment in the age of the church. And there's three moments that mark this: the French Revolution, the Spanish Revolution, and the Italian Revolution. All three of these radically shifted our understanding of the nation state and led to lots of popes commenting into the modern era. So let's look at the French Revolution. Up until the French Revolution, kings were still crowned by the Pope. Everything came through the church, until the king allied with the church against the rebels. And so the rebels, when they finally conquered all of France during the French Revolution, thought of the church as oppressive, as mean, as problematic. And so the whole nation state of France was established under these rebels as a secular state, free of any religious tyranny, which then made the church leery. If this whole state can be divorced of all the morality and all the good sides of religion, we should be leery of the nation state. Same thing happened in Spain. During the Franco Revolution of the 1940s, Franco, who was a totalitarian ruler, said, "I will ally with the church," because the church thought that he would support them. Well, the rebels end up winning and saying, well, the church is wrong, and it led to a very strong degradation of the Catholic Church in Spain, something we've never recovered from. After 1,500 years of faithful people in Spain, it has greatly degraded in the last 100 years. Lastly, Italy. In the 1860s, Italy was what's called the Papal States, that there would be the Vatican City, followed by all these territories, which we now call the land of Italy. All the Papal States were under the banner of the Pope in that they paid tribute to Rome. They weren't actually governed by Rome, they were just paying tribute to them. Well, Italy wanted to become a unified country. And so the rebels of the 1860s through 1870s unified all of Italy by conquering all the Papal States, forcing the Pope to sequester himself to Vatican City. From that point forward, for the next 60 years, the Pope called himself the prisoner of the Vatican because of how violent that event was. So these three moments mark the transition from this kingship under the Pope to this new secular state of the nation, leading to Pope Leo XIII, Pope Pius XII, Pope John XXIII, Pope Paul VI, and Pope John Paul II commenting on the importance of nationalism. You might think that after all this controversy and confusion, the popes would say, "No, don't ally with your country. We are Christian. We're something different." But they don't. They see something wonderful in the importance of our national identity. And the greatness of our national identity is that we have a home, just like Jesus did. We have a place that we call our own, which gives us rights and responsibilities. It gives us freedom. It helps us to establish ourselves in a place. And most importantly, it gives us a service. We know our brothers and sisters. We are Americans. All of those people in the United States are Americans. Therefore, we are challenged, encouraged to care for one another, to provide for one another, to see ourselves as a unified people. That's very important. If we lose that idea of our unity, then we degrade into our own individualism and lose any kind of emphasis or energy or identity. That all fades away. So there's something very important in nationalism. It's not only our identity, it's our call to care for each other. And as Pope Paul VI commented in his encyclical, it's not just us in our border of the United States. We, as a bordered country, also have to look around to all the other countries around us and realize that with our resources, our abilities, our finances, whatever it might be, we should also care for those countries, providing for the entirety of the world. Looking at ourselves not just as Americans, but humans. We are part of the larger human family. We are Americans in a specific sense, humans in the broader sense. This is what they're commenting on. In the early 21st century, a new idea came into the fore, and it really challenged the idea of the nation state, and that is the global nation. That instead of being all these little territories and our borders and countries which seem to fight each other endlessly, let's become one global government with one leader, all of us united as humans of the earth. Some people think that's a great idea, and some people think it seems Christian, because aren't we all called to be in heaven with God as our ruler in one nation? There's no nations in heaven, there's heaven. There's a problem with this, and the popes have already commented on it. They said, if we are one big nation with no specific nations within it, then who are we? Do we really have an identity? Our identity is rooted in conflict with the other. So that the only way we can become one global world is if we found an alien race and said, we're not them. But until that point, we'd end up degrading down to nothing. We wouldn't know who we are. We wouldn't know where we're from. We wouldn't know what to do with it. So there's actually value in the individual nations. And if we go back to the Tower of Babel, we can see that very clearly. At the time of the Tower of Babel, there was one language. What happened? They tried to conquer God. And so God split them up. By splitting us up into nations, we also realize there's something above us. God is above us. So that if we're not careful, nationalism leads us to see only our country and being bound by it and nothing more. I am only American. I'm only going to fight for our country. That's not true. God is above us. And as citizens and Christians, we are called to bring in the justice and peace of God into our country, to establish God's rule here, and to guide all people to peace and justice within our borders, and then bridge that outwards to help the nations around us. This is our call as people of both established temporal reality of the United States and also eschatological reality of heaven. We are both. And we need to bring both together to be true good citizens, to put nationalism in its proper place of a part of a land, but called to be something greater. This is the virtue and wonder of nationalism, guiding us to seek who we are, to realize what we ought to do, and who we ought to become.